Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. It's episode 127. I'm Jason Snell, back in the saddle, and across the internet from me, also back in the saddle, it's Tim Goodman of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Jason, international traveler.
Yes. Where did you go? You didn't go far, did you?
I went to the broken and but still beautiful Big Sur.
I was going to make a Big Sur joke. Did you have to go in, like, hike in, or did you have to go in, like, through the one road that is open for, like, 1 hour a day, or what did you do?
No, there is, if you're coming from the north, where I'm coming from, always in the north, right? It's always winter, always. And the north will rise.
Winter is coming,
that whole thing, and sure. I was trying to escape it. So, actually, where I stay, which is a lovely little modernist spot, is about 2 miles before the bridge goes out. So,
all right. Sweet.
Yeah, I was covered there. I go there at least twice a year. Yeah. And that place is good. I would, and it's unfortunately, a lot of the state parks in the area are closed. Some restaurants on the other side of the bridge have gone out of business completely. Hopefully they'll reopen when the bridge reopens, but that could be another year. I will say that, I did run into a lot of people who don't, apparently check, anything about their trips before taking them. But there were a lot of people who were like piling up in the local little bar there in Big Sur saying, I was on my way to Hearst Castle and this road is out. I'm like, yeah.
That's,
you gotta fix that.
Yep.
Surprise. So, but yes, I still was able to do a little tiny recharge with nature, and I loved it.
That's good. It's good. I, meanwhile, not too far from Big Sur, of course, is the Santa Cruz Mountain region of Ben Lomond.
Yes.
I was near the other one. I was near the original Ben Lomond, and floating in a boat in Loch Lomond, in fact, at one point. I was on the Bonnie Banks, and lots of Scottish stereotypes I could read now that I won't. But yeah, so Scotland, that was a place I went, along with Ireland and England. So
that is, I know, times. Ireland is, and now there's so many connections, Jason. Ireland, my homeland, clearly. Yes. And Ben Lomond. One of my sisters lives in Ben Lomond in Santa Cruz. So there we
look
go.
At that. Well, I saw the original. The Scottish are very proud of it because, you know, it's tall compared
to vastly better.
Yeah. And there's terrain. Like Scotland's interesting because it has terrain, which England doesn't. So
right.
That was all good. Good time. Came back here. The weather was pretty much the same here as it was in Ireland and Scotland, which is yes. faintly damp and cool and maybe a little sunny, actually. I was lucky.
Oh.
I got a little bit of sun when I was there. So
that's nice. Yeah. Usually it's in Scotland, it's highland hard rain, as we know.
Yeah. Well, I was just on the border of the Highlands there because I was staying in Glasgow. So we have to thank David Laura for filling in, as he often does for me, or occasionally does for me. And we have to thank Dan Feinberg, who made I thought about asking David, saying, well, you could always see if Dan Feinberg wants to pinch it because he hasn't, you know, he hasn't done a podcast in a while, and that it actually happened. So it was very nice to have Dan's voice on a TV podcast again.
It really was, and it's funny because David asked me, and I was like, oh god, that's never gonna happen, because look, Dan's like super busy. I'm going away to Big Sur while Dan's stuck doing all these reviews, and it happened miraculous.
He made it happen.
Yes. I thought we were joking that Moises was going to fill in from Austin and then, you know, talk about meat.
Uh-huh.
It would have been a nice thing. About
would have been good.
TV and meat conversation, or actually probably theater and meat.
Yeah.
But we actually end up having a TV podcast fill in for us.
Theater Meat Machine is the name of that podcast. It's a totally different podcast.
Hey, you know what?
Popular in Australia.
Got wheels, my friends.
Mm-hmm. So thank them. And somebody wrote in and said, clearly the solution here is just to have TV Talk Machine 2 with David and Dan also every week. And then we build the TV Talk Machine empire. Somehow I think The Hollywood Reporter might have a problem with that. With us building an empire on the backs of the TV review staff of The Hollywood Reporter.
Well, you know, as we've mentioned before, it is out there for them to take advantage of. So we're just waiting on it.
Yeah, I think it would be great if they produced a podcast with you and Dan every week. That would be a really cool podcast. And well, it hasn't happened yet.
I am keeping my mouth shut.
Yeah, that's probably all for the best. So anyway, I hope people enjoyed that, and thanks to David and Dan. That was fun to have Dan on. He's a lot of fun on podcasts and doesn't get to do it so much. So
yes,
that's great.
And he said that as he tweeted out, hopefully I can do this vastly superior to Goodman. Very funny.
Yes, and our friend the mask scheduler said that won't be a problem. Zing, boy, the wrestling. That guy is like a professional wrestler. He wants to be your nemesis.
Well, he can no longer be my nemesis because I blocked him.
Yeah, I know.
On Twitter.
I know. Mm-hmm. He has ways. He can find out. He has spies.
Yeah, he can spy.
He's cranky.
I'm done with him.
He's cranky.
I need less annoyances in my life. Yes. And so I took him out.
He's got the professional wrestling. He's he's like, you're the face and he's the heel. That's literally, I've run out of things that I know about professional wrestling.
Now that I've there said you that. Go. That's very good.
Okay, so I've got a theme for this episode, mm-hmm. which is returning faves. Like the shows are coming back that are critical faves. Things you have written three pieces in the last week and a half about returning series that you really like, but before we get to that, we should at least mention that Prison Break came back. Yay!
Oh wow!
Not a returning fave.
Right? You had to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I need to footnote it. I just need to mention it. We don't even need to get into it. Your review. Let me see if I can do a good job of summarizing your review of the season break. Because this is a revival, like the X-Files revival and the 24 revival before they did the 24 reboot, which is like Fox saying, nostalgia train, unearth old shows, mm-hmm. do them again, right? Your review is basically, well, if you used to watch Prison Break, maybe... But that's it.
Yeah, and even then.
Yeah.
I
think you said you got through two episodes and you're like, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, that was my duty. It was stupidity on parade.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, if you like, so really the goal here is just to say, hey, do you remember Prison Break? Do you remember liking it? Although don't think too hard about like the later seasons. But if you do, Fox made more episodes that you could go see and.
I like the idea of like being in a room, because I support the fact that the networks do really have to do things that are franchises that are familiar, whether they come from television and their own television or they come from movies, because it's a very crowded field. People may not know that. We've never talked about that. And so familiarity gives them a little bit of a leg up. But I would have loved to have been in the room where when the Prison Break guys go, okay, look, our main character's dead.
Yeah.
How about this? We just... revive him with barely an explanation.
We just say it turns out he's not dead.
Yes, it turns out he's not dead.
The point too, which is also brilliant, which is not only did he die, when he died, he had like a terminal illness.
Right.
And they're like, nope.
No, not a problem. Nope. I actually, to me, the funniest thing about all of this is that that he is not only alive, but he's actually in another prison.
Yeah, of course he is.
Yeah,
of course he is.
So good.
You know, they almost. I don't know. What are you going to do? You killed off a lot of your characters, and now you want to have them back. So you make something up. It's fine. I this is my obligatory Doctor Who reference, and I'll mention the Doctor Who season premiere is this weekend.
Yes. Uh-huh.
They have, you know, recurring monster and villain characters and like that they're never going to kill, right? Because they always come back. They've come back for 50 years and they're going to keep coming back. And at some point the show decided to be like, we're not even going to explain how this person is still alive. Yes, you saw them die. Now they're not dead. And like literally there are lines of dialogue like, yeah, he does that. Like just, we're not going to even. Because why? Why even bother? Look, suffice it to say, he escaped somehow, thing happened, whatever. And I feel like that's what Prison Break's doing. Is look, he's alive, okay? Don't ask why. It's fine. Just in the words of Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is also back today on Netflix, it's just a show. You should really just relax. If you really want to watch Prison Break, does it matter that they killed off?
Yeah, just go. Just watch it. Yeah, we have bigger issues.
Mm-hmm. It's fine. It's just a show.
I agree.
Not a show that deserves that much thought. By the way, I think they may have mentioned this last week, but BritBox did add all of the old Doctor Who series.
Oh, see, there you go.
Well, short, like 5 episodes, but most of what is in existence in the old Doctor Who archive has now been added to BritBox. I think they waited to make that announcement in it, to have it coincide with the new series coming back. But so if you're a Doctor Who fan who has thought about diving into the old series, you can get a week for free as a trial, and then it's, you know, whatever it is, $6 or $7 a month for access to the whole BritBox thing. So
yes,
there it is for those. There's a little news.
Yeah, and boy, did our little discussion of cord cutting take off. That thing had a life of its own. Still going strong on it's Twitter good. When people get back to me. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, no, there are like two big TV stories right now, right? One is this Platinum Age, like so much volume and so high quality, and like being an artistic destination for writers and directors and actors, that you know, high quality TV is a real thing. The other story is unbundling and cord cutting and what's the economic model, right? I feel right. like those are the two big stories in television in our era.
Exactly. And it's very complicated, but it's doable. And I think people are starting to figure it out, and they're definitely are interested. So yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah. Should we talk about returning faves?
Let's do it, because some of them are amazing.
Yeah. So, let's start with Better Call Saul season 3. You wrote about that, like a week ago. Yeah. A week ago. So tell me about season 3. How's Better Call Saul going?
It's really good. I think that the first thing to say about that show is that, you know, I thought the first season was strong. I think it was great. I thought it was very good. And that was not to be sort of critical of it. I think it had some issues. But I remember at the time, and frankly, I still am annoyed that people were saying, oh, it's as good as Breaking Bad. First of all, no, in that first season, and not even close. So in the second season, it really found itself. I think it's storytelling, character development, and became very, very, very good. I don't to this day think that it is going to be as good as Breaking Bad, because you to be great on that level, you have to pretty much be great out of the box. Later seasons is excellent as you improve, but like if you're going to compare it right to the other, I think it's a little tougher for me. But I really think that the second season of Better Call Saul, things really came together, and not only that, just better character development, particularly for Jimmy's brother, and I think that the transformation of the cast at the same time that Jimmy McGill was transforming closer and closer to where we knew he was going was really interesting, and it became its own season. I think we may look back on season 2 as its own season, because the echoes of where they're going were, Jimmy becomes Saul Goodman is what the third season is about. It may take, I think, just based on how I think these guys do storytelling, a full season to sort of get us there, which would put season 4 and beyond into the more getting into the Saul era. But yeah, it's really good. The performances are even better than ever, and I thought season 2 was fantastic, and there was a sadness that I didn't expect, you know. People forget that there was a lot of talk in the early goings about making Better Call Saul a comedy,
right?
And you know, obviously when it came out, they very much did not do that, and it was funny. There's parts of it are funny. Bob Odenkirk is just funny. There's no doubt about it. And his character is naturally funny, I think. And then you had some other people in it who could be cut-ups. But yeah, there is a melancholy inevitability about where Jimmy McGill is going in season 3 that Bob Odenkirk illustrates with his face and body in ways that are just heartbreaking. And I think that's what's really interesting to me about the season, because he's, you know, it definitely runs along a similar track of Breaking Bad, where it's like a good person does something bad. But the difference is, you know, I think that Walter White in Breaking Bad, you know, that's the whole point. He breaks bad, and he loves it. You know, he does it for his family at the beginning, and then he loves it. It's a transformation of a person, you know, as we say, Mr. Chips becomes Scarface. But it's the difference between it is that I think Jimmy would have always been Jimmy, and he would have been helping people, and he would have been, you know, possibly an ethically slightly challenged, certainly compared to his brother lawyer. But I think he would have done the right thing. He's good people. I think he gets annoyed at how strict the law can be, and he likes to see shortcuts. But the actual pushing him from his brother and other elements into what he becomes with Saul Goodman is much more heartbreaking, I think, you know, than Breaking Bad. So that's the part of it that I'm fascinated about.
And season three, how many did you see in season three?
Three, I believe. I've been watching so much TV lately. Yeah, I'm like,
what? But still on track from season two.
Still on track, yeah. And you can just really sense it in there.
All right. Great. So also coming back, I would say, up there with The Americans as what I would argue is like your favorite show of the last couple of years. I'm not sure, maybe, you know, if you've got a feeling about that, but it's certainly up there is Fargo.
Yeah, and I think that's as I've said on Twitter, that's an American TV masterpiece right there. And I think that, you know, I wrote the original review off of the beginning of it was written off of one episode. And then I went to Big Sur and they said, oh, before, you know, because it's not coming out just yet. And they're like, well, we posted one more. So I got to watch that on the Sunday that I returned and stay up really late and add a bunch of stuff to my online review. I'm not sure how different that'll be from the magazine one, but I always tweet out the longer one because it's usually better. But what, you know, the thing about Fargo is it was my number one show in 2014 and my number one show in 2015. Yeah. And those were spectacular years for television. You're talking amazing. Landmark television was in play, and it still finished 1-1 in each of those years. 2016, it was off, obviously, and now back in 2017. What I'm saying is it has a legacy of creative ambition met in both of the seasons, so that by the time I watched just two, I would prefer to watch four if I could or more. But having just watched the first two of this upcoming season, all the familiar rhythms and patterns are in place. Everybody is nailing it. Noah Hawley, who did Legion, obviously, is on one of the better roles you might have seen we might have seen in modern television. Certainly if this season continues, and I have every faith that it will continue. And everybody is excellent. The writing, which defines the series, is amazing. And it's so adroit, like, that it can do everything. It can do soliloquies, it can do what seem to be pointless discussions between people, but they're not pointless because Noah Hawley is a novelist and loving words is his thing, and they define characters even if they're not moving the drama at that specific time. And then it can do, as I said, declarative sentences where, you know, someone can be blunt and it can be like one line, but it's so revealing about the character, or either the one who said it or the one who received it. It's working on a level of dialogue that it's unbelievable. And as I said, I don't think a show is as distinctive season to season in what it is since Deadwood.
Wow. So, I mean, yeah, so I guess it is. It ranks above, you're right. The reason it wasn't on last year, so Americans kind of ascended to number one, right? But the last two seasons that they've had Fargo, it's been your number one.
Yeah, and I'm a huge Americans fan, so when they're in competition with each other, it's very difficult for me. You know, and that's a good problem to have. It doesn't mean that the Americans at the time is any less, and we'll see how this flows, because they will both end in 2017, so they'll both be eligible, as will Legion. So, you know, and so many other good things that are coming, apparently. But yeah, they're all going to be battling for certainly up in the top five spot. We're only in April. It's amazing.
I would say it's a good sign that, though, that a show that you hold in such high esteem, you get to the third season and you get your sample episodes and your response is, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like, instead of being like, you know, it's not as good as the... No, it's like, yeah, more of the same, more yes, please, more of this level of quality. That's a really good sign.
Yeah.
And people can go, if they haven't seen it, they can go back and I think the first two seasons are on Hulu. I'm not sure, but
yeah, I think they're both on Hulu, but they can also jump in, you know, cause it's an anthology. You can watch, you know, if you just said, I love the excitement. Everybody's talking about it, but the idea of going back and watching two seasons is a drain on me.
Just start with three.
There you go. It's an anthology. You'll be fine.
All right, so that's Fargo down. Another fave, another returning fave, Veep season 6, also back, and you wrote about it.
Yeah, and that one is, you know, it's funny because I interviewed David Mandel over in at the Jewish Community Center in San Francisco live on stage, and then he did a little piece for THR, which echoed some of the same things that we talked about on stage, which was kind of interesting. But yeah, I mean, the main thing to know is the things that he illustrated, that they had mapped out this course for not only the fifth season, which it was last season, the direction of that season and how it ended. They mapped it out before it had started, which allowed them to say, okay, when that ends, when season 5 ends and things change, and Selena Meyer is no longer president, then we can have this other world. And so that definitely avoided the fact that they don't have a presidential storyline that would be challenged by Trump. So as I said in my review, I mean, they kind of luckily avoided that, but they didn't do that because of Trump. I mean, he wasn't even, you know, he was in the race, but he wasn't even there yet. And the fact that Selena Meyer is an ex-president, and in some instances, I mean, you'll obviously be looking at it as a woman who didn't get where she wanted to be and now is on the fringes. It's not a Hillary story because they didn't, you know, they thought Hillary was going to win, as everybody did. So, and Selena was already out by that time. So all the parallels that I think people would come to look at for that series, have, you know, David Mandel's already said, you know, that's not how we did it. It's just fortuitous luck. And I think the one thing that he used and I used together on this is that, like, what if you did have Matt Walsh, the actor playing Mike McClintock, who was the press secretary, who was famously bumbling and stupid and botched things and made them much more. He started more fires than he put out, I think we could safely say, as the press secretary. But what if you had him be that now when you've got Sean Spicer? You can't top reality. So in some ways, Veep is lucky that they're not mimicking the current regime. So, but it's still funny as hell. There's some stuff where I was doubled over laughing, and I would replay it, and I would double over again. I freely admit that I had some laughing sessions where I was crying, and I was joyfully happy that I was doing that.
It's great to hear. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny how art sometimes, you know, they don't intend it to comment on reality, but it's so steeped in sort of like the zeitgeist that they don't realize what they're doing, but like, mm-hmm. The show goes in a place, or any art, right, it goes in a place, and then reality also goes in that place, and that's not a coincidence, because they're you know, they're soaking in the world that led to those conditions. So I think it's mm-hmm. not surprising that you end up with something that maybe has resonance right now, even though it wasn't, you know, a conscious decision to make it so.
Right. And to me, the bottom line was, beyond all of that, is it funny? Because it's always been one of television's funniest show. And oh my God, is it ever? And I like I said, there were a couple times I would play back stuff because I was shocked that they actually made that joke. And there's just outrageous jokes. And I could print some of them. So you can imagine, based on the ones that I printed, if you go read the review, you can imagine the ones that I couldn't print. So yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, I should say that Andrew, from Ireland wrote in, and I can't, you know, not read a letter from Ireland.
Yes.
But he said, he asked actually about Veep, and and you've answered his question without me even asking about it. What, can it reflect current the current situation? It's like it doesn't need to, and yet maybe it does a little bit in feeling because it all, you know, the TV lead times are the way they are. He also asked, by the way, if the current series Trump would be renewed for a second season, but he thinks the characters are a bit over the top. And Andrew also mentioned the series The Trip is back in the UK and Ireland. I watched this actually last time I went to the UK. My friend had me watch a couple episodes of The Trip, which is very funny, and they seem to edit those into like a film and release the film. I think they did that with the first one. They may do that again, but people could check out for that. He says, love to your mothers. I'm sure their Easter bonnets will stop traffic and turn heads, not stomachs. So thank you, Andrew.
Andrew's the best.
In Ireland. Some other things before we get to more letters. The Leftovers is back. I know Dan is reviewing that, but that's it's the third and final season of The Leftovers, which I'm still sort of like stuck midway through the first season in it because I got distracted. But when I picked it back up after sort of like trying it and being like, wow, this is very sad, I've actually kind of, I watched like four or five more and I really liked it. So it's on my to-do list, but this will be the capper. This is the third and final season for Damon Lindelof's post-Lost adventure.
I'm so excited for the third season because The Leftovers is one of my favorite shows. Mm. So I didn't get to review it, but I can't wait to jump on that.
Yeah, everybody, it's funny. Everybody seems to like it. Like the first season, there were sort of likes with qualifications. And the second season, it strikes me that most of what I read was no qualifications, that the second season was even better. So everybody's looking forward to the third season and it will be the end. So that'll be interesting, too. I always like to see how they guide that into a conclusion in some
yes.
way.
Yes, and me being the kind of person I am, I will say that my season one review had no asterisks.
Good. All right, solid. So there was a moment in, I forget which episode it is, but there is an episode of The Leftovers season one that I only watched after I picked it back up because I watched the first, whatever, two or three and thought that, you know, wow, this is good, but it's also really kind of sad and I'm not sure if I want to go deeper in. And then I went a little bit deeper and I got to the guest episode, which is episode 6, and I sat there and thought to myself, this is one of the best pieces of TV I've ever seen, like, as an episode of television. So, yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's very strong. Highly recommended.
Handmaid's Tale, not a returning show. The Handmaid's Tale series, Dan reviewed on THR, so people can go look at that. But it's back, and it seems to be getting pretty good reviews, I think, everywhere.
I think everywhere. I think it is one of those universally acclaimed series. I have not actually read any of that stuff yet, but I'm so excited for that series too. It looks really great.
Yeah. So just so people know that it's out there and it's on Hulu with Elizabeth Moss based on the Margaret Atwood novel. You may remember that. You may remember the movie that they made, but it's out there. And it's a Hulu series. And yeah, the Metacritic score, 97.
Wow. That is amazing.
Yeah. So and Dan really liked it. So
yeah, very high.
And should we tease Gorilla, which you mentioned before we started recording, and I was really excited that there was a whole TV show about a gorilla, and you said it's not that kind of gorilla. It's like guerrilla warfare.
It's not that kind of gorilla. We should tease it for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the most obvious,
By the way, don't tease an actual gorilla. You'll make them very angry.
No, that would be very bad.
Yeah.
Yes, they're large. Mm. I think that the main reason to get people excited about this, because it airs this Sunday, right after our worldwide simultaneous release.
Yes, that's right. Even in Australia, Sunday has not yet happened.
It hasn't, which is rare. They'll have one day. We'll have 2 days. They'll have one day to prepare for it. The reason is it's really unbelievably well put together. And I'm finding things in it. I actually asked to talk to my editor and said, look, hey, I need to see many more episodes of this if I possibly can and delay this review until Sunday, like the day of, because I just want to cram in more stuff. It's that good.
So it's Showtime is where it
it's
is.
Showtime.
And it's, although is this a, this is like a British co-production. I think it's airing co-production. I think it's airing like same week in the UK and here. And Idris Elba is
Is in it. Yeah, and he is. It'll be really interesting to see the reaction of people have him. It's set in London in 1971. There are lots of parallels to, well, our country for racism, for starters. There and also the current climate of trying to really ban and then you know make life very difficult for Muslims in this country. But that's the parallel to blacks in England at the time. And it's 1971, so it's, wow, there's some serious institutional racism. National Front's there. The police force is, you know, very cracking down hard on that community. And it's spawning a reaction to fight back, which is basically the gist of it. And John Ridley has directed, I think, almost every episode, if not all. I think maybe two he didn't do. And he wrote, I believe, all of them. So... he's the one behind American Crime, and he's very busy.
And 12 Years a Slave, right?
12 Years a Slave. And so I would, you know, American Crime is excellent. As a lot of people have said, that's probably our best. That's probably our best network series. Mm. And I think that after people see Guerrilla, they're going to see this is I do this a lot because it's true, but it's a step above because it's they're able to do more on cable, and they're able to of nuance that I think was missing from this. One of the things that I didn't like so much about some of the American Crime, even though it's good, is that it kind of doubled down on dropping the anvil a little bit to make points. Mm. And Guerrilla is much more subtle. But no less ambitious in like really convoluted strands of racism and nationalism and different ethnicities talking about what matters to them. It's really, really fascinating. And I was like, yeah, I need more time for this. But it's on Sunday, so mark your calendars.
And it's, I think, 6-episode mini series, basically, in the British style.
Yeah.
So check that out. And the only other item I had on my list of like good shows coming back, returning faves, is just I looked it up because I was wondering if it was coming back. And yes, later this month, in a couple weeks, Catastrophe Season 3 will be on Amazon. I think it already aired in the UK, but it will be on Amazon like the 26th or something like that.
Yeah, and I'm going to be reviewing both Silicon Valley, which we can talk about next week, and also Catastrophe. So, yeah.
That's great.
Very excited. Good. April has been a hell of a month, let's put it that way.
How about that?
A lot of really good stuff coming out. And then we haven't even got to American Gods, which is the end of the month. So.
Right. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Right.
There's so much there. So much. Want to do some letters?
Yeah, let's do that.
But before that, let me take a break to tell you about our sponsor. We got another sponsor. Woo-hoo! I don't know what's happening here. It's the talk machine keeps rolling.
Yes.
This episode is brought to you by Keepsake. Because we always have them handy, oftentimes the best memories are captured on our phones, then we forget about those photos and leave them to gather dust in our camera roll. Now that can change thanks to Keepsake. It's an app that lets you take the photos on your phone and have them printed, framed, and delivered to your doorstep straight from your phone to your home. All you have to do is download the app and start uploading your favorite photos. There are dozens of options under $30. The prices are good, much better than your local frame shop, and you get free shipping straight to your door. All of Keepsake's frames are individually handmade in the USA in tons of different styles, including wood frames, modern frames, rustic frames, and black frames. Don't lose these memories, the ones that you store only on your phone. Do something with them. Get them onto your walls or give them to a friend. With Keepsake, download the 5-star rated app today. Search for Keepsake in the App Store, KEEPSAKE, or use promo code TV Talk when you make your first order in the app, and you'll get 15% off. So thank you, Keepsake, for sponsoring the TV Talk machine.
Yeah, could put some Big Sur pictures in there.
You could get them out there on your wall in a frame, which is nice. It's true.
Yeah.
All those photos just live in our phones now.
you go through there and you're like, oh, right, I had that trip last year. It was amazing, but never thought about it again.
You used to have photo albums or things like that, and they're just like, get stuff on your walls, and then you'll at least have those nice memories. All right, letters. Art from the 425 wrote in, and I thought this was an interesting point. He says, I admit it, I missed the short critical post-credits clip on Legion during my viewing. Apparently, I wasn't the only one. The internet seemed to realize that many had and made a bit of a point of circulating the clip to the clueless viewers like me who missed it. It can be argued, I suppose, this was a brave artistic choice, but I kind of think it was a bit botched at a more practical level and didn't really serve the viewers very well. What do you think about what they did in the finale of Legion of having an ending, rolling the credits, and then at the very end of the credits, like a movie, like a Marvel movie, having a scene after the credits were over?
Well, it's made by Marvel, so this one, that's one thing. But, you know, it's been done before. They did that in a very important way on Mr. Robot for similar in the first season. And, you know, I don't know if when I saw that, I don't know if it's like we're trying to make you watch everything and, you know, see an ad, but it really just rolled from the credits. Whereas I think that I could be wrong, but I think you had to come back for Mr. Robot. But that's neither here nor there. I'm OK with it. I think that the creators must feel like there needs to be a separation of emotion. So that's how I look at it as far as storytelling. It's like, this was a thing. I told a story and I wanted it to end on this note, to project this feeling from within inside of you. And then when that was done, I wanted this other thing. And I don't want to feel like one takes away from the other. So, you know, maybe it'll feel a little tacked on to some people, but I think separating that little bit was important, and I think it was important for Mr. Robot too. It was a totally different look at what was happening.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it. I, for whatever reason, I had this intuition thing happen where I fast-forwarded through the credits just in case there was a little bit more, and then there totally was. So I feel like I got away with it. But I also feel like this is one of those things where if you end the season with the scene that goes into the credits, you haven't really lost anything. You've lost a little bit of a cliffhanger, but that's about it. And we live in an era where that clip is going to be on the internet. And in fact, you could argue that clip is... You could view it as being a digital bonus extra tease for next season that they only float online on Twitter or something. I mean, they could have deployed it in different ways, and you could even view it that way. And I think also when they come back for season 2, episode 1, are they not going to replay that scene at the top in order to get you into it? Of course they are. So you still wouldn't have missed it. So it's sort of an optional coda that he can throw out there to get to whet your appetite for season 2 without, as you said, kind of missing the emotional beat that he wanted to end on.
Right, exactly. Plus we got to use the word coda.
Coda. Yes. Mm-hmm. Some fancy stuff there. Hey, Dave, in the plus 4-4 place that I was not too many days ago.
You were there.
Wrote in to say, and this is funny because what Dave is writing about, I actually had a conversation with some people I was staying with and we talked about this very point. So Dave says, the coverage of subtitled TV dramas in the U.S., do you think there's a gap in terms of mainstream coverage for quality subtitled dramas, or whether you think they're always going to be something of a niche market? I mean, yeah, subtitles basically is always going to be a niche market, like foreign languages with subtitles. That's going to be... You're never going to see that mainstream anywhere in the U.S., right?
I think you're right, because I think people don't want to read.
Yeah, and today, but today there are streaming services, and I know that Dave is going to get to that, and I feel like streaming services are making this a no-brainer, that it's not going to be a problem for streaming services to offer this stuff, and then they have a home for the people who want to see it. But as a mass, you know, this is a big country, and it's very large, and it has one dominant language, and so yeah, less and a huge amount of entertainment available. So you put all those things together, and it's always going to be a niche thing. So Dave has some recommendations, and it's funny because I had some of these shows recommended to me last week by the person I was talking to. It's very funny. So one, Nobel, which is a Norwegian drama on Netflix about a special forces unit stationed in Afghanistan. to Occupied, another Norwegian drama on Netflix, imagining a near future where Norway is occupied by Russia with support from the EU when they plan to stop all oil and gas production in favor of cleaner energy. 3, Trapped, an Icelandic crime thriller. Crime thriller, which aired on Viceland in the U.S. All 10 episodes still on the website as I type. For those who liked Fortitude until it went kind of bonkers, this is a more orthodox mystery series with a terrific setting.
And Fortitude's back.
Yeah, sure. And he says, 4, The Bureau, which I think is the one that I had recommended. My favorite of the lot is a French spy series about a deep cover agent returning to Paris after being undercover in Damascus, where he fell in love. It was originally released on iTunes in the U.S., but now is available on Sundance Now. It's a wonderful series. So I think that's pretty cool. And Dave also mentions that apparently, in addition to Walter Presents, which we mentioned before, there is another obscure streaming service called Megahertz Choice, which is for fans of crime procedurals. There are 2 different Swedish Wallanders, Italian Montalbano and French Magritte, The Churchman and Kabul Kitchen, and the Weissensee Saga from Germany. And they even have an Irish series called Corp and Annam in Gaelic.
Wow.
With Mrs. S from Orphan Black in it. So,
wow.
There is another source for this, which is Megahertz Choice, which is mhzchoice.com. It's another streaming service that's $8 a month for all of these international mysteries, dramas, and comedies, they say. So, so many streaming services, but also really cool because, like I said, my friend in England was like, these European, non-English dramas are really great. And it used to be you just could never see them. And now you can if you look.
And the ones that you mentioned early on, not the ones that are on Megahertz, but the ones that are those, when we should put those in the show notes or something, because are those Netflix?
Netflix, yeah. Nobel and Occupied, he says, are both on Netflix.
Yeah,
and Trapped is on Viceland website streaming, and Bureau is on Sundance Now. So they should all be available via some means or other in the U.S.
Wow.
That's cool, right?
Okay. Yeah, that's very cool.
That's cool. You just got to read. if you're somebody who doesn't mind subtitles, there is an amazing amount. I mean, really, if you're somebody who loves that kind of genre, and it really is like the European crime drama, especially, there's never been a better time, right, to pick and choose. There's a whole streaming service devoted to that, basically. And and it's all there now, because why not, right? Why not bundle that together and sell it to people in America? The United States is so huge that you only need a very small group of people to care about it. Yeah. For it to be a pretty good amount of viewers. So,
yeah, it's yeah.
What a
I'm
world
up for that.
Way, our podcast not subtitled.
No, although sometimes it has a checked box.
Sometimes it does. That's true.
Alan features drop bears.
My enemy, Alan. No, nemesis. Not an enemy. Just a nemesis. In the
660.
Oh, hello, Alan. Said, there will be a 74-hour span of time next week from Sunday evening to Wednesday evening, featuring all new episodes of Girls, The Leftovers, Better Call Saul, a regular old mid-season episode of The Americans, and finishing up the gauntlet with Fargo season premiere. It's a Moiterer's Row, he wrote in. You gotta have the little lingo there. I can't think of any previous instance of that many all-time great shows putting out new episodes in such a short span of time. I think that's it's a cool observation. What we mentioned earlier, there's a lot going on right now.
It is insane. It is insanity, but in a good way.
All right, here's one last letter. Mike from the Five and Dime.
Nice. Way to be just blunt, Mike. It's just Mike, and he's from the Five and
Dime.
It's
so simple. With all those subtitles that we had before, now we're back to the USA. Mike and the Five and Dime. Mike says, hello, Tim and Jason. I'm a longtime fan, and I look forward to hearing a new episode every Friday afternoon because that means my weekend is about to start. Sorry, Australia. Despite everybody being overwhelmed with the amount of TV out there, I'd like to make one recommendation and ask one question of you and the listeners. Oh, get ready. It's going to happen.
Uh-oh.
My recommendation is the British series River on Netflix. It's only six episodes long, so it's not a big commitment. Stellan Skarsgård is amazing in it. It's less a police procedural, more like a meditation about coping with grief. I would love to hear this show get the acclaim that it deserves. That's cool.
Yes. In fact, I just to add to that, I heard, I think I brought this up. It might actually be somewhere rattling around in the TVTM archive somewhere. There's a thought that escaped my mouth and bounced around because I do distinctly remember people coming up to me and saying, hey, have you heard about The River?
Yeah.
And I said, nope.
It may have been that episode where we talked about how we don't know anything that's on Netflix, even though we have a podcast and you are a TV critic, because there's just so much on Netflix.
There's just so much, right? Yeah. And then John Doyle, who I really like, he's the Canadian critic. And I, you know, in the past, I've touted his amazing soccer books because he's a great soccer writer as well. John Doyle, I believe, I want to say, you know, time passes. I want to say 2 years instead of one, but I think it was 2015.
2015, yeah.
I believe 2015 was The River was his number one show.
Yeah, look at that.
So, and I heard him say that via Twitter, like the day after that somebody had asked me. So I'm like, oh, there you go.
See?
I have now.
It's
heard
out
of
there.
The River.
It's bubbling. It's percolating. So good job, Mike, because now our listeners have heard it again here, and people can check it out. Mike's question is, do you have a white whale out there, something you'd love to be able to own or watch that you can't find anywhere? For me, it's all the musical performances from the SNL archives. I've never seen them available online, and I doubt they'll ever be. I guess there's a licensing issue or something. I thought NBC had put a lot of SNL stuff up at Hulu, but obviously not like all the musical performances or something. That's interesting.
Huh.
Do you have a white whale? Is there something that you wish you could watch again that just is not available? Because I'll say my white whale actually kind of is what we talked about earlier, which is the entire archive of the old Doctor Who series, just because some of it is kind of unwatchable now because it's so old, but I've always wanted to like dip back and see that stuff that I never saw or I haven't seen since I was a teenager. And it was all on DVD, but I was never going to buy a DVD, right? Of something I just wanted to kind of watch on a whim. And now that BritBox has the whole thing on streaming, that's like that the white whale. I got the white whale now, which is I can just dip in there and like reminisce about some episode that I watched when I was 15. And that's cool. So that for me, that's that one. And I don't know what else. That's I guess the big one. Now that Max Headroom is on DVD, I'm okay.
Well, but that's the thing, right? If it's on DVD, you still have to go buy
it. It's true.
So does that count? I think of it as like...
it depends on what you want to
like
do.
Streaming.
But yeah, you're right. It should all be like on some streaming service somewhere, right?
Yeah. My white whales, I have three of them. They've been mentioned to them before as well, two of them as shows I think that need to be remade. But my white whales are Northern Exposure.
Oh, yeah.
Cannot find that anywhere.
Huh.
Zero places to find it.
That's not cool.
Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think should be remade.
Mm-hmm.
And currently, there is no place, I believe, to find Maisie.
Oh, no, that's terrible. Maisie's completely unavailable?
I mean, I think Maisie is only available on little snippets of YouTube, which apparently they're not.
Yeah, FanTV bears that out. That's terrible.
Yeah. I did find it online, and I thought, like, maybe the Maisie people have not, like, cracked down on that. You can find, I think, some full episodes on YouTube. Because I've gone there to do my little down decompression.
Yeah. I've got a couple more that I'll put out there. The original Rob Thomas produced Cupid with Jeremy Piven and Paula Marshall is a pretty darn good show that never was released. In fact, never was released on DVD, is not streaming. And Rob Thomas wrote a funny piece about how the DVDs that he's got of it, he bought on eBay from somebody who like found off-air copies in Canada and burned them to DVD. So even the guy who made it does not have it on DVD. Well, he does. He's got the pirated version. And I've got Cupid in video file format, but they're all these incredibly, they're like half resolution of standard def. So they're almost unwatchable. But I did do a rewatch of it when I got those files, and I thought, yep, I still like this show. This is a really good show. And, you know, it didn't make it. The ratings were terrible, but I really like that show. And it is also it has vanished from the world. You can't get it.
Wonderfalls.
Wonderfalls, also not out there anywhere.
Also completely not available.
See, that's wow. That's a shame.
See, there's some that are out. There's some of that darkness that's missing. I know that for the longest time, I wanted to see Prophet,
full
series. There's nowhere you can find Prophet anymore. I think they ended up with the last three episodes were shown in Europe, and somebody had taped it on a VHS and sent it to me.
Yep.
And saying, here, you can complete your unfinished Fox series, Prophet. But, of course, I don't even have a VHS player anymore.
Yeah, that was with Max Headroom until they released the DVD. I did end up somewhere. Oh, I think it got run on, like, a cable channel. They had an episode they never aired. And, like, 10 years later, it aired on cable in the U.S. And that was the first time anybody had seen it. Which is, again,
wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of that, especially the failed shows, the shows that lasted like mm-hmm. one season.
Yeah,
there's
that's tough,
not right? a lot of motivation to put those on. Oh, another one, and this is another one where I have the download, and I'm pretty sure it's not available. I'm going to look it up right now, is Easy Streets.
Oh, yeah, that can't be available, right?
You wouldn't think so. I mean, it was another one season flop from Paul Haggis. Also not available anywhere, according to Fan TV anyway. And Joey Pants is in that. That is such a great show.
That was one of the best.
Deborah Ferrantino.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Joe Pantoliano, Joey TV's Joey Pants. Yeah. And so I've got an off air that somebody recorded when it was on, when Trio was doing the brilliant but canceled thing.
Oh, yes.
Which was a great idea, right? Because it was like literally, these are shows we could buy cheap because nobody wants them because there's only one season of them. But Easy Streets was so good.
Oh my God.
And dark, and right? That was like before there were cable dramas. Easy Streets was an attempt to do a cable drama.
It was really
on CBS,
really dark.
Which they didn't get it, and nobody wanted to see it, and so it died.
But oh my God! It totally died. And Paul Haggis created that.
Yeah, Paul
series.
Haggis. Yeah, Ken Olin. Right. There are a bunch of good people in there.
And I got two quick Easy Street stories for you.
Sure.
We just have to have them. I was actually waiting for my car in LA. This is typical. Yeah, when Paul Haggis was waiting for his car, and I said, "How does Easy Streets end? Is it coming back?" And at the time, I think that he was pitching it elsewhere, so he said he couldn't tell me, and then drove away.
And we'll never see Paul Haggis again. No, nobody ever heard from Paul Haggis again.
Never again. That man never. Yeah. Andy Richter Controls the Universe, also not available.
Oh man, so good. Especially if you're a fan of Better Off Ted, which was also a good show from the same guy who did Andy Richter Controls the Universe.
Now, is Better Off Ted available? That's the thing.
Oh, man. We're going to just go down a pit here of shows that are really great that nobody will ever see. This is why, Tim, that somebody someday needs to make that streaming series for like older TV shows.
Yes, you can watch
Better Off Ted is on
Netflix.
All right. Well, there's something.
Well,
at least you can
watch. That was a hell of an end.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Mike from the Five and Dime. So anyway, he goes on to say, "Thanks for always helping end my week on a high note. Compared to the previous versions of the TVTM, this latest one is shockingly informative." That's true. Watch out for drop bears and Sydney funnel web spiders.
It is shockingly informative.
Mike from the Five and Dime.
Thank you, Mike. I'm trying not to, you know, do what that thing at the end that you don't like me to do. But I will say this, the second story of Easy Streets I wanted to tell you was, okay, this is back when it was VHS copies
all right.
only.
You Columbo'd me, but this is my own fault because you said you had two stories and I just moved ahead at one. So this is like a self Columbo. It's on me. It's an own goal. It's an own goal.
Oh my God. I love it. In off the crossbar. So Easy Streets was just VHS tapes at the time. And I had been a TV critic for less than a year. I think maybe this is my second year. I don't even think it was the second year. It was my first year. And I remember getting the Easy Streets tape, literally tape, watching it, being totally hooked on it. And they sent, I believe, two episodes. And one of the episodes has nudity in it.
Wow.
It's a, and I was like, what the, what? This is CBS. And it was, so I think when they really were shooting it for like a cable type of thing, it's not like regular nudity. It's like a see-through, like nightgown. But there is no mistaking that it's, you actually see nudity. And I was like, I don't think that's ever going to get on.
They must, that must be one of those things. Cause that they did used to do that. I don't know if they do that anymore, where they would shoot two versions of scenes, and there would be like the more adult version and the less adult version. And they did that so that they could have the options to sell it internationally.
Ah,
they do. Cause the, at which, you know, that is my fancy way of saying, hey, if we show boobies, maybe France will buy it.
Well, it now is, we have the title of our show.
It is the American crime drama. It is much acclaimed from Paul Haggis, and there are breasts that are visible, and so we would buy your easy streets.
We have completely devolved in this last end, but it was very fun though, and very informative.
Yeah, that's all. Thanks a lot, Mike, from the Five and Dime.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks,
good
Mike.
Job, Mike.
All right. Here is how you can reach us. You can send us an email, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can post in our Facebook group, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. And of course, you can tweet at us, which is a great way to do it. Tweet at TVTM. And that's how you can reach us for next week, when on Friday or Saturday morning, Australia time, we will do another episode of the TV Talk Machine with more to talk about, because there's so much television. So much. All right, Tim, all right. Until next week, nice talking to you. See you next week.
Good talking to you. Welcome back.